This episode of Film Frenzy contains spoilers for Lady Bird. Consider this your spoiler warning.
Hi, I'm Brooke.
And I'm Tom.
And welcome to another episode of Film Frenzy Friday. Today we are talking about Lady Bird from the year 2017, directed by Greta Gerwig, 1 hour and 33 minutes, starring such as Saoirse Ronan, Timothy Chalamet. A lot of nobodies in this movie. We've got Tracy Letts, who looked a little bit familiar to me. Lucas Hedges, Beanie Feldstein, Jordan Rodriguez, Marielle Scott, Catherine Newton, who was in Blockers, and Andy Buckley makes a little appearance there, who played David Wallace on The Office for a little while.
When you got Laurie Metcalf there, who's I guess most famous for being on the sitcom Roseanne. That's where I know her from.
Oh, gotcha. That's why she looks a little familiar to me.
I don't know if she's ever actually been in any other movies that I can think of.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure. But she did look familiar, but her name wasn't familiar to me.
Right.
So, I mean,
Well, as soon as it started, I kind of realized who she was, and I don't know how you pronounce her name, the main actress there.
Oh, Saoirse.
Saoirse Ronan. Yeah. I know her from that Lovely Bones
movie. Yeah.
So when that started, I was kind of looking like, oh, I know her.
Yeah, she was in, she was also in the new version of Little Women, which is a fun fact about that movie and Saoirse Ronan and myself, is that that was the last movie that I saw in theaters before the pandemic struck. So.
I do remember that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was good. I mean, if it could have been the last movie that I saw before the pandemic, like, you know, I wish that it had been Sonic the Hedgehog, like many other people, but, you know. So anyway, like I said, this movie's from 2017. In 2018, it was nominated for a bunch of Oscars. It won a bunch of Golden Globe Awards, but it was specifically nominated for Best Picture. Saoirse Ronan was nominated for Best Actress, and I think it was also nominated for Best Screenplay, but it didn't win anything. And fun fact, it actually lost out to Shape of Water. Do you remember Shape of Water?
I know the name, but I don't remember what movie that is.
That's the one about the deaf girl who falls in love with the fish man.
Oh, I don't know if I ever saw that.
That movie is so weird.
Yeah, it's that's so I don't know. I might have seen parts of it, but I don't really remember.
I feel like you told me you tried to watch it and you like couldn't finish it, which is very fair. It's really weird.
Yeah, I would say that's kind of strange.
Yeah.
Don't know if that's quite up my alley, but
yeah, this movie is very obviously Oscar bait, and it like does everything that they're looking for, which I mean, yeah, I mean you can see it in the acting, and it's like kind of like weird, and like you could almost classify it as like an indie movie.
That kind of had that feel to it.
Yeah, because you know it's got the like kind of grainy film look. It takes place in 2002 in like Sacramento, of like all like weird places and times to take place.
Right, and it almost seemed like all the scenes were very short, like they were real quick.
Yeah,
and I know that from like the movie you shot. Your Super Dad movie, like each scene went really quick. It was like you got to the point, boom, you moved on to the next one. You got to the point, boom, you moved on to the next one. That's kind of the feel I got out of this one.
Yeah, this one, it's different in terms of like plot, because I would say that the plot, as opposed to like a normal movie, it's just a series of vignettes, more like just highlighting the highs and lows of her like final year of high school. And, like, her family life and all of that, to kind of get you to enough of a gist where you, like, understand her, if that makes sense.
Right.
Which, I mean, it more feels like memories to me than, like, an actual movie. Like,
okay,
moments that were important to her, like, good or bad, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I almost say that this gives me a Napoleon Dynamite kind of feel for some weird reason.
Yeah.
And maybe it's the indie film feel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know. But I think with the shopping that they do, like they're always going to the discount places. That mm-hmm. gives me the, like I said, the Napoleon Dynamite feel.
Yeah, definitely.
But it wasn't necessarily funny. I don't know if there was any part that was really funny in this. Very strange, but not funny.
They classify this movie as a drama comedy. I think that there are moments in it that are like funny, but it doesn't feel like a comedy. Like you don't laugh the whole time. It's very much gives you like mood whiplash, like emotional whiplash, because it's like, oh, she's really happy. Oh, now we're sad. Oh, we're happy again. Oh, I'm laughing. This is funny. Oh, now we're sad again. Oh, she's fighting with her mom again. Oh, no. Oh, now they're not talking. Ooh, like it just, it's like highs and lows constantly.
Right. Well, right off the bat, I mean, doesn't really explain what's going on in this one. It just jumps right in. So she's in the car with her mom and they're arguing about school, I guess.
Well, they're listening to Grapes of Wrath first, which is one of those like highs and lows moment, because the whole thing is they're in the car, they're doing this college road trip, right?
Okay.
So they're wrapping up this college road trip, and I guess over the course of the road trip, they've been listening to Grapes of Wrath on like tape. Okay. Quick set the scene 2002, right? And the mom's like, you know, they finish it. She makes a joke. Oh, our road trip took, you know, 21 hours and 50 minutes or whatever. And she goes to turn the radio on and the mom says, why don't we just sit with what we just heard? We don't have to entertain ourselves the whole time. And then they start arguing. And then she throws herself out the car.
Yeah. And it started and it's like, what the hell just happened? What's going on? So yeah, she just jumps out of the car, out of the moving car, and breaks her arm. And then, you know, fast forward to the doctor's office or whatever, and they're putting a cast on her.
Right. And she's got the cast, and she writes, fuck you, mom, on the cast.
Right.
So, I mean, quick set the relationship.
Yeah, you already see there's obviously tension between the two of them.
Mm-hmm. I think that the relationship between Lady Bird and her mom is really interesting because it gives a perspective where, like, they're both right, but neither one of them is right. If that makes sense?
Yes. I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, it's a really cool trope that you don't really see that often. Where it's, you can sympathize with both of them, but, like, only kind of. Because it's like, I get where you're going, I get what you're, like, saying here, but, like, maybe here you shouldn't have done that.
Right. Now, see, me as a parent, and, you know, a more developed an adult, you can see both sides of it.
Right.
I can personally, because there's you being the college student.
Right.
And you have the parent side of it, and they don't really say what you're supposed to be following here. You know, right. Who do you agree with? So I can see, like you said, agreeing on both sides, but only to a point.
Right.
I unfortunately side with the parents at some cases more than I do right. with her. And I don't know, it almost feels wrong because I don't think that that's what the movie's supposed to portray. But that's the feeling I would get.
I don't think that the movie wants you to side either way. I think that more towards the end, I think they want you to see Lady Bird's development more than anything. But I think that there are some moments where you're like, ugh, like, Lady Bird, what are you doing? I mean, maybe that's just because, you know, I've grown past that stage that she's in. And, I mean, maybe, you know, going back and being 17 and watching this, you would agree with her more?
Absolutely.
But I don't know. I think, you know, I'm a senior in college. I've been there, done that. And it's like, ugh, stop. Like, please, like, you don't understand, like, what's going on in the world. You think you do, but you don't.
Right. And honestly, it took us a while to figure out the time frame on this one. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they ever said, but the stuff that was going on and the music that they were playing, we were thinking more late 90s.
Right.
But then they, later in the movie, they started talking about post 9/11. So we're like, okay, so it's after 01.
Right.
So then there was a picture, I think the prom, and it said what? 2002 or 2003?
Yeah, I think this is supposed to be Lady Bird's senior year of high school, and she would be graduating class of 03, so it's from, like, September of 2002 to, like, probably August, September of 2003.
Right.
From beginning to end.
Yeah, because I think the prom picture said prom 2003.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But I honestly, when this movie started, I was having a really hard time getting into it.
Yeah.
Because it was just so off the wall weird. Because she was just weird. And it was, I don't want to say it was making me uncomfortable, but it was something I was just, I'm not into this at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I bared with it and I said, you know what? Brooke says it's a good movie. I gotta struggle through this. It seemed like it was be a little more controversial.
Yeah.
In some ways.
Yeah, you're right. But
in a lot of the stuff that happened, it makes sense because in that time period, you can see how things were and things that weren't accepted.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like the strangeness of her.
Right.
That time frame, that wasn't normal. You know what I mean?
Right.
You look at that situation now in the way she acted, and it makes a little bit more sense. Like, it would be more acceptable in today's standards, the way she was acting and the way she wanted to be.
Right. You're exactly right.
If you follow what I'm saying.
Yes, I agree with you.
So you think about 2002-ish and 2002, 2003. That kind of stuff was weird and odd.
Right.
And I don't know, it gives you that uncomfortable feeling because, I don't know, it's accepted now. Mm-hmm. I don't really know how else to explain that.
Yeah, I think that it's interesting because, I mean, I'm pretty sure that I was in preschool in, like, 2003 to 2004. So,
yeah.
I don't really know, like, what life was like. I mean,
like, teenager life.
Yeah, like, I don't remember, like, 9/11, so I don't remember before 9/11. So, I don't know. And that's, like, gonna probably, like, be, like, jarring to, like, some of our, like, older listeners, I guess, is that concept that people don't, there are people who don't remember 9/11 who are adults. So I think that it's an interesting perspective for me personally to watch a movie and be like, oh, she's weird. Like, I know people who are weird like that. And then, like, I was weird like that, you know? And for her to be, like, so, like, I guess, judged for being so strange is, like, weird right. to me.
Well, it's, like I said, it's the time frame.
Exactly.
And I think they did a good job with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And the whole feel of the movie is very early 2000s as well because, you know, you've kind of got the graininess and, you know, it looks like it was shot on film. I don't know if it was, but it looks like it was shot on film. The colors are very, like, saturated, and they put a lot into, like, the appearance of the movie to, like, make you feel like you were actually in that era, which I picked up on this watch. This is the second time I've seen it, so.
Okay, I want to comment on something that was kind of a funny thing, and it's like a, I don't know, it was more of like a late 90s or early 2000s situation. I know it was more 90s song, but they're at that Western themed dance.
Yeah, that was weird.
And they're playing Crossroads
okay.
by Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Okay.
Do you know that song?
I don't. I might.
It is very not Western. It's, I don't know how to explain it. It's almost like mid 90s rap.
Okay.
Like, it's a, I want to say that, like, Eazy-E and that group.
Oh.
You remember seeing, what's that movie called?
Oh, Straight Outta Compton?
Yeah. At the end of the movie, when he's dying in the hospital room, his friend drops him the tape, and it says Bone Thugs on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the group that they were starting, I guess, and he was supposed to produce or help manage. And actually, in that video, there's an image of Eazy-E
really?
As like a tribute kind of thing. But yeah, it was just, it's just a very not Western themed song. It was just funny that was in there.
Yeah, that part was really strange to me. Because I was like, oh, they're at a party. Because the whole thing with this school that she goes to is it's a Catholic school, right? So, like, there's, like, nuns. They're very on top of, like, you know, your skirt has to be a certain length, like, you know, because Jenna gets in trouble later because her skirt's not long enough. So tell me why there were girls in, like, tight tank tops and, like, short jeans, and the tank top said, save a horse, ride a cowboy. And then she, Lady Bird and Danny got yelled at for dancing too close. So are we going to pick and choose what we're enforcing at this Catholic dance?
I guess. I know I did notice the shirt, but that's also the song that came out that time period.
Right.
Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy.
So I was like, that's interesting.
Right.
Leave room for the Holy Spirit, but save a horse, ride a cowboy.
Maybe the nun just didn't get it. I don't
Maybe.
Know.
Maybe. So the whole thing with Lady Bird is she has to get into college. That's her, like, ultimate goal. Is that she wants to get out of Sacramento, and she wants to go to college on the East Coast. But her family, like, isn't doing well, like, financially. Her dad just, like, got laid off or fired or something. So I don't know if... I don't know what the economic climate of this time period was. Like, was there a recession, or are these just people who were struggling?
Probably just more people were struggling.
Okay.
I mean, I know things weren't really booming back then. Right. I feel like people are doing way better these days than they would have been back then. But I don't know. We were only in our 20s back then, so
right.
We were always struggling.
Yeah, because I know that there was, like, the 2008 recession, but I didn't know if there was, like, a post 9/11 recession.
It could have been.
Hmm.
I mean, that could be what it's referencing.
Yeah.
I just think that they're just struggling.
Gotcha.
I don't think it's necessarily anything to do with what's going on in the world. It's just they're a struggling family.
Gotcha. Because the mom's, like, a nurse, and she works all the time. And she works, like, nights, and then she comes home and, you know, like, we'll make breakfast and then go to sleep, basically. So, Lady Bird's nun, I guess she's, like, a counselor or something. The sister, Mary Eunice or something. She is, like, no, that's not her name. I feel like that's a character from American Horror Story. But anyway, the sister is, like, you know, you should, like, try and find, like, more extracurriculars to, you know, help get yourself into college, basically. And she tells her, you know, to audition for the fall musical. And she's like, I didn't even know we had a fall musical. So when her and her friend Julie audition for this musical together, and you can tell that during the auditions, Lady Bird, like, really tries. Like, she tries. She, like, has a whole song and a little dance to go with it. She dressed really nice. And then, you know, Julie auditions, and she, you know, just, she isn't as, like, out there as Lady Bird is, but she, like, does very well, and, like, you can, like, you know, she's kind of nervous, she's not really dressed up, but her voice is very nice. And then later Lady Bird is cast in ensemble while Julie gets the lead. So I think that there's an interesting dynamic between Julie and Lady Bird throughout this movie. You know, you kind of see how Lady Bird is almost, like, always jealous of Julie, because she doesn't really struggle in school. She might be struggling financially, but, like, she isn't struggling as financially as, like, her parents are. Like, her mom is, like, dating this guy who is David Wallace from The Office, who she calls Uncle Matt, which is weird. And right. He, like, brings them, like, lunch every day, and she's, like, kind of got, like, her shit together in a way that, like, Lady Bird doesn't. So you kind of see this weird power struggle between them, like, very low-key, but it's still there.
Right. And I think that they give Julie that part as more of a, you're not that good, but we feel sorry for you, so we're going to give you this part.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of look at it more like that, because she didn't try as hard, but it's like, oh, you put in a good effort, so we're going to do this for you. It's almost like that participation trophy situation.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess. I didn't really think of it that way, but I can see why you also think that. I think that Lady Bird was just almost too confident. I think that was the problem.
Right.
Where she was almost, like, cocky in that instance.
Mm-hmm.
So, through the musical, they meet Danny, who is a boy, obviously, And Lady Bird, like, immediately, like, you can see it, like, look in her eye, she has a crush on this guy. And, you know, they date for a little while, and he has money, obviously, because it seems like, because she goes to this Catholic school, everybody has money, for the most part. I mean, it's implied that she's there on scholarship, so I don't really know how that happened. Because the way that her mom talks about her, she talks about her like she's stupid. And I don't know if she talks about her like she's stupid because she genuinely thinks that she's lazy and stupid, or if she's just worried because she has these big dreams and then she's going to leave and never see her daughter again, kind of thing.
Right. I don't know where they really go with that in this one. Like, why does her mom treat her the way she does? Couldn't really narrow that down. It was just more theories.
Yeah. So I was kind of struggling with that. Like, I'm not totally sure why the mom, like, talks to her the way that she does sometimes. I mean, it could just be that she's, like, stressed out and frazzled constantly, like, lack of sleep and, you know, things just get on her nerves and she snaps. But, I mean, it's still not, like, nice. You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, you could look at it many different ways.
Yeah. But anyway, Danny comes from this rich family, and in the beginning of the movie, Julie and Lady Bird are walking through, like, this rich neighborhood, and they come across this big blue house, and they're like, wow, this is my favorite house in all of Sacramento. I wish I could live in this house. So when Lady Bird starts dating Danny, they find out that this house belongs to his grandmother. And she's like, wow, like, I could inherit this house. I could actually live here. Like, I'm within, like, grasp of, like, my dreams. So you see very much how she kind of shapes herself into being this, like, quote-unquote, like, rich person. Because she, like, that's what she wants. I don't know if I would necessarily say that she's, like, ashamed of her family, the way that her parents make it out. But I think she's just so desperate to fit in because she's so weird and quirky and has been, like, shit on for being weird and quirky, like, her entire life.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what everybody really wants. She just wanted to fit in with a different crowd.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
She was jealous of the other girl. What was the other girl's name?
Oh, Jenna.
Jenna. When they saw her car.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they said something. I think they said something about her parents bought her the car or something like that.
Right. Right.
When she says later, she says, you know, she asked Lady Bird, where do you live? And she said, oh, such and such a street. Or the 40s, she said. I live on the 40s. Oh, that was where we had our starter house.
Right.
So that's a really rich neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And this girl was living there with a starter house.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, she tells her which house it is, you know, to make her, I don't know, accept her more. So she wanted to be that. I don't know. She wanted to be more rebellious, I guess. She didn't want to be in the same group, and it was more, you know, I'll stir things up by following this crowd instead.
Yeah. Well, obviously that mostly comes from her finding out that Danny's actually gay, which, I mean, I don't know if I remembered, but I was like, the way that he, like, interacted with her and spoke to her, I was like, why do I feel like he's gay? Like, why am I getting that feeling? And he was gay. But I genuinely don't know if I remembered that or not. I don't think that I did. But I think that it was the situations that the two of them were in together were just, like, when she was like, you know, you can touch my boobs, right? And he was like, I respect you way too much for that.
Right.
Like, what teenage boy, like, Catholic or not, like, what teenage boy is like, no. Actually, no.
Right.
Like, I'm sorry, that doesn't happen. So, when she found out he's gay, it was after the fall musical, which that whole situation was so much from the get-go. They have dinner at a diner afterwards, and they're just being obnoxious, which apparently is like theater kid culture. I don't know that. I'm not a theater kid, but that's theater kid culture. Like, they do that. Like, after, like, musicals and shit, they go to, like, Denny's or some shit and just, like, cause a fucking, like, ruckus. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was making me a little uncomfortable watching them act like that way in the diner.
Yeah, they, like, that's a thing. Like, they do that. So, they try to go to the bathroom, and there's a line for the bathroom, and Lady Bird says something about, oh, there's no line for the men's room, like, obviously. So she walks into the men's room with Julie, and she opens up one of the stalls. Danny's in there making out with another guy from the show. So there are several things Danny could have done to not get himself caught like this. First off, lock the stall door. Why was the stall door not locked? Second of all, your girlfriend, your beard is here, and you're just gonna make out with another guy in the bathroom? Like, homie, you were trying to get caught.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, I think of it more of a movie thing. They had to make it.
Well, yeah.
They had to make it, you know, possible. Yeah, real life, yeah, that probably wouldn't have gone down the same way.
No, I mean, yeah, no, that wouldn't. So, then, Julie had this, like, weird thing going on with the math teacher.
Yeah, that was very strange.
So, like, he was very flirtatious toward her to start. I think that, like, because I was like, that's weird. Why are you talking to your student like that? That's gross. Don't do that. Because he there's something about the tone in his voice and the way that he would, like, kind of fuck with her. Like, he would mess around with her. Like, it was just very inappropriate for, like, a teacher-student relationship. So, like, I can see why Julie would have a crush on him. Like, he was openly flirting with her in class.
Right. Well, I'll bet you, if you did some research and you looked it up, I'll bet you that was the time frame when they were having legitimate situations like that with teacher-student relations.
Right.
And I think that was just a way of portraying the time period with a situation like that.
Right. Well, because I know that it still happens, but it doesn't really happen, I guess, near as much as it used to.
It probably does, but people are smarter and just keep it quiet.
Yeah. Which is weird. Don't date your teachers. Don't do that.
Don't. Well, there's a lot of do's and don'ts in this world, and not many people listen.
Don't date your teachers. Don't date your teachers.
Too much common sense, I'd say.
I guess so. They don't love you. They're grooming you. Don't take your teachers. It doesn't matter if you're going to fail chemistry. Don't date your teachers. So anyway, all that aside, she finds out before they go to the diner that this math teacher is married and about to have a baby. Like, she meets his wife. And you can just see on her face that she's very, like, distraught about it, because obviously she thought that there was, you know, something going on. Whatever. So they go and they're sitting in a convertible. I don't know whose car. Oh, it's Uncle Matt's car. They're laying in Uncle Matt's car and they're, like, screaming along to a song, which is very, like, that is very much part of, like, the high school, like, female experience. It's very much a part of it. Being heartbroken with your best friend screaming along to a song in the car. Very, like, peak high school female experience. So that was a good scene. But, like, going on, after Thanksgiving, they had gone to this house, this, like, under, like, basement concert thing. And she had, like, locked eyes with the guitar player, who's played by none other than Timothée Chalamet. And he plays a douchebag named Kyle. quite a stereotype there. But Timothée Chalamet, I love Timothée Chalamet, but he does look like a Victorian orphan with tuberculosis.
That's very specific. What?
But is it wrong?
I don't know what that would look like.
But yeah, I mean, he very much fit in when he played in Little Women, because he just looks like that. I love Timothée Chalamet, and I will say it with my whole chest that he looks like a dying Victorian orphan. Like, it's just something okay. About the way that his, like, face and his cheekbones are just so skinny and he's so pale. Kyle. We're introduced to Kyle. And this is the part in the movie where she kind of decides that she's going to switch. Where she decides that she wants to be the rich girl because she wants to be able to get closer to Kyle. And the only way she can get closer to Kyle is to become closer to Jenna. Because she starts working at the coffee shop. And then she sees Kyle there, and she's like, oh, hey, I was at your concert on Thanksgiving, and I really liked your band. And he was like, oh, how did you, like, you know, whatever. How did you, like, find out about it? And she was like, oh, through this girl, like, through my friend Jenna. And he says, oh, Jenna's great. So that's when Lady Bird decides that she has to befriend Jenna because she wants to be able to date or hang out with Kyle, basically. So what do you think about Kyle?
I don't know. He seems like, I don't want to say a loner, but just, I think he's strange just like her. You know, we all knew somebody like that. But I don't know how to put my finger on what type of person he is. Because even when he was with that group, he was always off by himself.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Because mm-hmm.
even when they went to hang out at the parking lot, he was just kind of sitting on the car. Was he reading a book? He was doing something off by himself.
Right.
So to me, he's popular, but that's kind of strange that he was off by himself.
Yeah. Well, and then you have this, like, very, like, sad situation with Kyle also, because, you know, he's got this dad who's dying of cancer, like, slowly, and it's, like, very, like, hard for him to watch. But he also just says the darndest shit. Like, you know, he asks Lady Bird if she has a cell phone. And the first time that I had seen this movie, I didn't realize that it took place in 2002. I picked that up this time. And I was like, why would she, like, not have a cell phone? And she was like, oh, we don't have one. Like, I don't have one. And she doesn't really say why. And then he says something about, good, because they're a government tracking device. Like, yes, but you didn't have to say it.
Right. And then he says, you know, well, that's just for now, because in the future they're going to implant the trackers in your brain.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's that weird guy that, I don't know if he just believes in conspiracy theories, but he's just that strange, off the wall kind of guy.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, when I saw Kyle, I wrote, Kyle sucks and is stupid. I do not like Kyle at all. I think that he just very much fits, like, a gross stereotype of teenage boys who suck. Like, the way that he lies to Lady Bird about, like, being a virgin, and he, like, very much, like, just doesn't really treat her right, but she kind of puts up with it anyway. Like, it's just very, like, it, like, sucks. And it sucks because, like, we've all been there, you know what I mean? So to, like, see, like, somebody, like, go through it so unwillingly is like, oh, girl, like, get away from him. You're so much better than that.
Right, and you can actually say the same about her brother, who I'm assuming is adopted.
Yeah, I don't know. They don't really specify. But probably.
I mean, I don't know. Because his name's Miguel. And she makes that comment about he got accepted into some college because of his race. But he says, I never put my race on there. And she said, well, your first name, you know.
Right.
But regardless of that, him and his girlfriend are equally strange.
Yes.
Early in the movie when they're having breakfast and they're talking about the eggs. And he's like, oh, eggs are dangerous for the environment. And then he says, oh, we're trying to be vegan. And she's like, well, you guys wear leather jackets. Oh, but they're vintage, so it's not hurting anything. So they're just very off the wall.
Yeah.
And, like, the facial piercings and stuff, that was a big thing around that time period. It was more like a rebellious, hey, we're going to do this. Hey, I think I can put a, you know, a stud here and a stud there. And then, you know, she even points it out, you know, you're never going to get a job with your face looking like that.
Right.
And, like, he's, like, touching his face, like, oh, man, you know what? She's probably right. But he's working at the whatever store that is.
Yeah, the grocery store.
Yeah, and she comes in and she's, you know, ruffling through the magazines. And he's always yelling at her, you know, I'm not your sister here. I'm a customer and I'm always right.
Right. Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of characters that are weird like that in this one. And I think they do that all on purpose.
Yeah, and speaking about Miguel and his girlfriend, Shelley, I think that it was really interesting when, after Thanksgiving, when Lady Bird came home and, you know, her friends left and she was standing outside with Shelly smoking a clove cigarette. And Shelly is like, you know, your mom really missed you, like, here tonight. Like, she's really sad that you, like, didn't come home for, like, stay home for Thanksgiving, you know. I thought that it was really interesting that they had her be the one to tell her, you know, your mom misses you. Like, you, like, need to be more considerate of, like, your family. And, you know, she, Lady Bird says something like, oh, my mom hates me. And, you know, she's like, well, she doesn't hate you because, you know, I think your mom's a good person because of, like, everything she did for me. So I think it was interesting for them to have Shelly be the voice of reason in that moment, even though, like, she didn't really necessarily, like, have stake in it, if that makes sense.
Right.
And sometimes that's, like, what you need, you know, the most, is somebody who, like, is not necessarily an outsider, but who doesn't really have a stake in any of it to tell you that, like, you're being, like, an asshole.
Mm-hmm. It puts it in perspective for her.
Yeah.
She starts to realize, maybe you're right.
Right. Because then after that, that's when, later, Danny comes to the cafe and tells Lady Bird, like, please don't tell anybody I'm gay. You know, they have that whole, it's going to be bad. I can't have anybody know. And she says something about, you know, my mom is good and she's warm and, you know, she has a good heart and, you know, whatever. But then Danny says, no, she doesn't. Like, she is, like, something. And he says, how can you be, like, uptight and warm or something? And I think that puts it once again back into perspective for her, because that's when she starts fighting with her mom again more and more often. Is her having somebody else tell her how her relationship with her mother should be.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. If that's not quite a reach. And you see after that they kind of become friends again. Her and Danny become friends again.
Right. And that's kind of when she starts making that turn of, you know, she's kind of changing and growing up.
Yeah, exactly. So Lady Bird and Danny start talking again. And after that, Lady Bird gets all of her letters back, right, from the schools that she applied to on the East Coast behind her mom's back, right?
Right.
So she doesn't get into Columbia, she doesn't get into somewhere else, but she gets waitlisted for the last one. And it's in New York. Whatever school it is, it's in New York. I don't remember which one it is. So after Lady Bird graduates, they go to the graduation dinner. Her mom thinks that she's going to, I think, Sacred Heart or something. That's, like, not too far. And Danny comes up and says, oh, did you hear back about the wait list?
Right.
And then it comes out. Then they have that really intense scene where Lady Bird keeps apologizing to her mom. And she, like, just won't talk to her. And it's kind of implied that she, like, doesn't talk to her. Or talks very little to her throughout the summer. Because she doesn't, like, come... Her dad comes in with, like, and wishes her, like, the happy birthday. And, you know, they have that whole conversation that's like, you know, is mom really that mad at me? Like, she's never going to talk to me again. She hates me. And he's like, no, she doesn't. So they kind of go this really long period of time without speaking. And then that's when you start to see the vignettes of Lady Bird gets her license. She's, like, working more. She is getting ready to leave. Like, she's, like, painting her room and packing and leaving. So my thoughts on that whole thing are, I think that it's a little dramatic of the mom to be so angry about it for so long. Because while she did go behind her back to do all of this stuff, to get into this college, to be able to afford it, she still is doing something that in the long run betters herself. So is it actually dramatic, or am I just too much in Lady Bird's perspective?
I mean, I think you could look at it either way. I don't think there is a right or wrong in that situation. You know, it's a...
Right.
How it personally makes you feel. You know, right. I think there's a lot in this movie with that.
Right. But, like, how do you feel about that, like, as a parent? Like, if I did that, like, what would you do? Like, would you be mad?
I don't know. It's hard because it's not a personal situation.
Right.
But, see, throughout the movie, you can side with either one.
Right.
And it seems more like, I was trying to narrow down why she would act that way towards her daughter, and I think it would be more, she doesn't want to see her fail. I looked at it that way.
Right. That makes sense.
And even when she was going away, you can see that she finally is trying to accept it, but she can't. Mm-hmm. You know, when she sits down and she's writing those letters and she's trying to get out the words to explain to her mm-hmm. how she feels. So not knowing her background, I mean, she may have struggled. Maybe she was maybe she was weird when she was young, you know, and her parents didn't accept it and she was forced to change. And she says, you know, I had to change. You have to change, too.
Right.
So as disrespectful as it seems that the mom is towards her, I don't necessarily think it's intentional. Even though it seems intentional. Mm-hmm. Like, even when she says, you know, are you tired? She goes, what are you talking about? She goes, well, you're dragging your feet. You know, do you need to sit down? She goes, why can't you just say stop dragging your feet? Well, you know, I was just asking. Right. You know, it's simple things like that. Or when she tries the prom dress on, she really likes it. She goes, well, isn't it kind of pink? And she gets upset and walks away. She goes, why can't you just tell me that it looks nice because I like it? Oh, if you want me to lie to you, you know. So I think it's just she speaks before she thinks kind of thing. Right. Where she's not meaning to be disrespectful, but it really comes out that way. And I really think they overdo it in this movie just because that's the avenue they're trying to take with it.
Right, the dynamic.
So I wouldn't say that I would necessarily see. I would say I see more disrespect on the daughter side, personally. But I understand why she's acting that way because of the way she's being treated. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's I don't know. It's hard because like I can see both sides of it because I've been on both sides of it.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Well, like going from there, like, into the airport scene, I think that is, like, the most heartbreaking scene of this movie. Because you can see the heartbreak on both sides for, like, both of them.
Yeah, so they pull up to the airport, and she's saying, you know, okay, here you are. And she's like, you know, I'm leaving, I'm going to college. She goes, well, they won't let me in anyway. You just gotta go. You gotta go. Come on, get out. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it was more like I want you to get out of the car and I want you to say goodbye to me. You know, I want to have this moment and you're just not having it. And she drives away and I had that feeling. I was like, she's not going to be able to do that. She's going to have a change of heart here. And you could see it like panic sets in like, oh God, I did something wrong. I got to go back. So throughout the movie where she knew she was saying things, she finally realized I made a mistake. So you can almost go back to all those little comments that she made. And after she said them, she probably regretted it.
Right.
Same situation, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, everybody's had that thing where you get hyped up in a certain moment where you say something. It's like, oh, shit, I shouldn't have said that. You know, and you.
Right.
In some case, you can't backpedal. You can't take that back because it's already out there. Mm-hmm. But an airport scene, you know, she says, oh boy, I got to get back. And she gets back to the airport and she's already gone. And like your heart sinks. It's like, man, she finally realized what she's doing and she wanted to write it. And now she's too late. You know? So, I mean, you could even think of something even worse than that. Like what would happen if the plane crashed? How would she have felt about that? You know? And that's actually a good lesson for this kind of movie is, you know, things like don't ever go to sleep angry. Don't ever walk away from an argument without, you know, making things right because you never know what's going to happen next.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah, and I think that the dad in this movie is a very good, like, mediator almost, like, without intending to be because he, like, does what dads do in these situations, and he, like, kind of tries to help solve the problem, but, like, not too much where he's overstepping, if that makes sense.
Right. Well, he's also stuck between. He has to, he still has to play right. both sides.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think that he does a good job with, you know, what he can do. Like, you know, having to, like, go behind his wife's back to help Lady Bird because he knows that this is what she really wants. And he wants to give her the opportunity to do what she really wants, right? And then, you know, he compiles the letters for her to, like, try and almost, like, stop this, like, ongoing battle that they have. Because he knows that if he doesn't give Lady Bird those letters, then, like, she's never gonna know.
Right.
So, that was, I think, one of the most powerful moments was him slipping those letters into her suitcase and then her reading them at school.
Right, and let's talk about that for a minute, because I think what they did in a movie sense worked so well, because you see mm-hmm. it's kind of showing like a montage of what's going on. You know, she's painting her room and she's doing all this, and you got the mom sitting at the table writing on a pad of paper, and you don't have any idea what's going on, so she's tearing them off and she's crumbling them, and automatically I thought, you know, she's trying to figure out finances, because the dad had at the bank, and he's talking about, well, if we mortgage the house, you know, where does that get us with the financial aid and all that stuff, you know, all the college stuff mm-hmm. that's really hard for parents. And then you see her sitting down writing this stuff, and that's what I thought. It's got to be something financial. And then fast forward to the end when she goes into her bag, and she has, is it an envelope or?
It's like a white manila envelope.
Yeah, so she takes out. And we think, oh, the mom wrote her something and put it in there. But then you see that the pages are all flattened back out.
Mm-hmm.
So then it clicks to you. It's like, oh, the dad did it. Mm-hmm. So she's talking to him on the phone. And he was like, you know, she didn't know how to say it. She wrote these down. You can never tell her I told you. But it kind of goes real quick. But, you know, the one letter, it was, you know, she actually calls her Lady Bird. She's actually accepting the whole Lady Bird thing. Which was mm-hmm. hard for her, but it says, when you were born, it was a miracle. And that's the only thing I really got out of that, because it was going right. so quick. But then there was letter after letter, but they were like all the same thing, but they were obviously worded different. So she would be right. able to read through them and see what she was trying to say, even though she couldn't say it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that goes so much into her finally accepting who she is. And I think that they do a lot of interesting things here in terms of, like, Lady Bird wanting to get out of Sacramento. Because the sister, the nun, tells her, you know, I read your college essay, and the way that you talk about Sacramento, you must really love it. While the entire time in the movie, she's saying, I hate Sacramento, I hate it here, I hate it here. And then at the end of the movie, when you finally get her leaving that voicemail for her mom, she says, you know, do you remember how you felt the first time you drove through Sacramento? And, you know, I wanted to tell you about it, but we weren't talking, because, you know, she got her driver's license after the fight. So it's like, they, like, do a lot of this setup in these little vignettes.
Right.
Which, I mean, is the same thing as the letters, but that one is one that they, like, really set up from the get-go. So I think that voicemail at the end, even though, you know, we don't really know what the mom says, but you can almost, like, feel her relief at the end.
Lady Bird's relief?
No, the mom's relief.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, like, you see how upset she was at the airport. And that's the last time you see her,
mm-hmm.
is how upset she was at the airport. But then you finally get that catharsis from her leaving this voicemail for her parents, and, you know, you are like, wow, like, she is going to feel so much better when she hears that voicemail.
Mm-hmm. Well, the whole sending your child off to school
mm-hmm.
is hard. And that's something you don't personally realize.
Right.
When, and I think that was a lot of it, where, in a way, I don't think she wanted to let her go. She didn't want her to leave.
Right.
You know, as terrible as she was treating her, it was more like a term of endearment in a weird way. But she didn't want her right. to go. And you always get nervous when your kids go anywhere. So what happens when she finally goes to college? She gets there. She's in a new place. She's talking to some guy at some party. And he's like, right. So where are you from? And she says, Sacramento. And he says, where? And she says, oh, San Francisco. Oh, yeah, it's a great place. You know, so I don't know why Sacramento is such a weird place that nobody would know. But I think they were trying to get the gist of she thinks she comes from nowhere. But regardless, she drinks, and then she's making out with this guy, and then bam, she throws up. And she ends up in the hospital. And I think at that point she realizes that, because that's before she makes the phone call. You know, when she's out and it's like, wow, you know, I'm on my own. I have to deal with this myself. And she starts getting that, you know, sentimental home kind of situation. So she calls home, and then that's where, you know, she talks about the whole driving thing, and they do that montage of her driving through town and how different a perspective it is, you know, from being driven around to actually driving yourself around, which in turn is, you know, living your life, and now you're at college and you're living your own life instead of being supported. You're supporting yourself now. So it all it all fits in to what the story represents.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that that is what makes this movie so good. Because, like, as weird and, like, strange as it is, like, the message at the end, like, really, like, hits home.
And also, when she's at that party, the guy says, what's your name? And she says, Christine.
Right.
And then she starts with the whole, do you believe in God? And he says, no. And then she's, I'm thinking, she's talking in her head, right, when she's saying, but...
No, she actually says it. Oh,
she says, you know, you're following the name your parents gave you or something like that, but you don't believe in God, something like that. But then when she calls home, she says, hi, Mom and Dad, it's Christine. So right there, also, you see her change from being that weird, like, rebellious girl to, you have to call me Lady Bird. It's what I am, and that's who I am. And then she's now calling herself Christine, which comes around, and it's like, you know, bam, you're finally growing up. And it also happens with Miguel, if you notice that, because he has all the stuff in his face. And then the dad goes to that interview. And this is probably a foreshadow, if you think about it. Dad goes to the interview. They don't like him because he's so old with the technology stuff. And then he leaves the interview. And here comes Miguel, dressed in a suit, hair's pulled back. He's looking, you know, trim and proper. He's got all the stuff taken out of his face. He's growing up, you know. So that's kind of a foreshadow towards the end of the movie of that's where she's headed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I think the concept of this movie is to, you have to let people be who they're going to be, but you kind of have to guide them in the right direction, but you have to let them fail on their own.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
And just hope that you raise them right and that they do the right thing and they pick up just maybe just a little tidbit of what you're trying to portray to them, you know?
Right, exactly. And it goes into the, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink.
Absolutely.
It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. And I think that's why I like this movie so much. I think that because you, when you're 17, you literally think you know everything.
Yep.
17, 18, you think you know everything. You are literally on top of the world. So to see her not fall from that, but learn that she doesn't really know everything, it really resonates with you, I think, and just kind of throws you back to when you were 17, 18. I mean, I know I'm 22. I'm not, you know, it's not like I'm 50 and I'm like, wow, I remember when I was 17. But, like, I remember when I was 17 and I thought I knew everything. And, like, I don't know everything now. I know I don't know everything now. But, I mean, I definitely know more than I did when I was 17.
I'm 41 and I don't know everything.
Exactly. So it's like, you know, you're always, like, learning and you're always going to grow and change. It, you know, just because you hit a certain age doesn't mean that you're done learning.
Right.
So I think that this is a good movie for that. I think it's a good movie for anyone who is getting ready to go through that transition.
Yeah, and it, honestly, it doesn't even have to point towards a direction of somebody that is, you know, getting ready to cross that bridge. It could be for somebody that has already crossed that bridge.
Yeah.
And, I mean, because like I said, it was hard to get through the beginning, but when it came out at the end and what the premise of the movie was, it was good. I don't know if I could sit and watch it again, honestly.
Right.
But it was a good story and had a good concept to it. And I think it's a movie you can definitely learn from.
Right. Well, yeah. And like I said, it's very much an Oscar bait movie. It was going to be weird like that. They wanted to win something for it.
Right.
So I think that's why it is the way that it is. But it still like gives off like a good like feel good message, I think.
Yep. So I think that leads us up to the end, unless you had something else.
Oh, I do think that it's interesting how this is kind of like going back towards like the middle of the movie. But after Kyle lies to Lady Bird about being virgin and they have sex and it is comically horrible, she, you know, is crying to her mom. And her mom's like, oh, you know, let's go do our favorite Sunday activity. I don't have a second shift. And they go and look at houses that they can't afford.
Right.
So I think that that also kind of goes in with Lady Bird and, like, not being, like, not wanting to be who she is. And I think that she, like, kind of gets it from her mom a little bit. So I think that you're right about her mom not having, like, also having been weird and, like, not, like, fitting in and, like, kind of being forced to change.
Mm-hmm. Well, so. And also, if you remember, right after that, she still goes to the prom with him.
Right.
And they get in the car, and he gets a phone call, and it's whatever the guy's name is, Brian or something. Oh, you guys want to ditch the prom and just go to Brian's? And they're all like, yeah, I do. And then she's like, yeah, I want to do that too. And then and that song's playing. It's Crash. I don't know who sings right. it. But then he says, man, I hate this song. And she's like, this is my favorite song. She goes, you know what? I do want to go to the prom. Can you drop me off at my friend Julie's house? And he was like, yep. So he's over it. He's done. And she finally realizes that she's gotten herself into a situation she doesn't like. She doesn't want to be those people. So then she kind of makes amends with Julie. And they end up going to the prom together. And I believe that song is still playing. And they're dancing to the song.
Yeah. And they have, like, the best time.
Right.
So it's, like, which is, like, another good lesson. Like, don't, like, force yourself to fit in places that you don't really necessarily fit in.
Right.
If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Don't change yourself because of a boy, especially. But, like, don't change yourself for people. Like, if they don't like you for who you are, then they suck and they're not worth your time.
Right. Well, and then when she finally turns 18, this was one of the funnier parts of the movie. She goes to the convenience store. She goes, I'll take a pack of cigarettes,
a
scratcher, and a Playgirl.
Yeah.
And then she's like, you know, I'm 18 today. It's my birthday. And the guy's like, well, happy birthday. And then she's outside smoking and looking through the magazine. And it's just like, you turn 18 and it's just like, you know what? I want to do something that I've never been allowed to do. Doesn't matter if it's something I want to do. I'm just going to do it because I've never been allowed to.
Yeah, exactly.
It was just, I was one of the more comical parts for me.
Yeah. Right. Well, and it goes into that mentality of like being 18 and now you can do all these things that you couldn't do before. So you think that you know everything.
Right. You're like, oh man, I'm finally an adult. You know, I don't have to do this and I don't have to do that. I don't even have to go to school if I don't want to. Well, you still do.
You should. Yeah, exactly. But I think that's all I got now.
Yeah, I didn't really have a whole lot for this one.
But yeah, it was a good movie. I'm glad that you at least enjoyed it toward the end.
Yes. Like I said, the first, I don't know, it was an hour and a half. Maybe the first 45 minutes or so, I was like, oh God, is this movie almost over? And I watch it with your mom and I'm looking over at her. I'm like, this is a weird movie. This is such a Brooke movie.
But good lesson. It's a good lesson.
It was good.
That's why I like it. I like it for the theme.
Right.
And I think that it's pretty.
Would I recommend it? I don't know who I would recommend it to, you know?
Right.
Like, people that I know, I'm not going to go to work and say, hey, guys, you got to watch this movie, Lady Bird. And they sit down and like, what the hell did you just make me watch? I don't think I could, you know. It's not a movie like that. But if you're looking for a movie for a young adult, sure.
Yeah. But anyway, I guess it's time to move on.
Yes. So, We still haven't named what we want to call our little spinny wheel here. Our wheel of fate, or whatever we want to call it, our movie reel that decides what movie we're watching next week. So I have it here, and if you're ready, we can go ahead and spin away and see what we're going to watch next week. So, alrighty, here we go. And now I am super excited because it's one of my favorite movies.
I can guess. It's... Oh, no. I thought it was going to be Rounders.
Oh, it's The Goonies.
Yes.
I love The Goonies. Takes me back.
That's such a good movie. Oh, my gosh. I'm so excited. So, The Goonies is a movie from 1985. It is an hour and 55 minutes. And you can rent it for $3.99 on Amazon Prime. It is directed by Richard Donner. Very awesome movie. It also seems to be coming on TV, a bunch within the next, I don't know, we record these early. But it's a very good movie. Josh Brolin, Sean Astin, Corey Feldman, Jeff Cohen, Jonathan K. Kwan.
Data.
Super good movie. Data, Super good movie. I know a lot of things about this movie, so I'm very excited to talk about it. It's very fun. But yeah, very good movie. I'm probably going to go off on a weird tangent about how Corey Feldman's weird again, but that's fine. And that just comes with
Do you realize that Joe Pantoliano is in it? Who played Ralphie in The Sopranos?
Oh my gosh, look at that.
Yep.
Yeah, oh my gosh. This movie is one with, like, a lot of great lines. Very strange. If you've never seen The Goonies, oh my gosh, you have to watch
it. If you've never seen it, you're missing out, and we can't be friends if you've never seen this.
You're literally living under a rock. Yes. I guess, quick gist of The Goonies. If you haven't seen it, it is a comedy? Yeah, I'd call it a comedy, right?
I don't know if I'd necessarily call it a comedy. I don't know what you would call a movie from 1985 that was... it's just a good movie.
It's, like, not really a weird coming-of-age type of story. It's a bunch of kids find a treasure map, and they go on the hunt for One-Eyed Willie's treasure. It's very good, very funny. They have to, like, outrun some, like, thieves at the same time. It has, like, Home Alone energy. What's that show that you liked? The one that I didn't watch.
Oh, the Outer Banks.
Yeah, it's very much has Outer Banks energy. If you like the Outer Banks, then you'll probably also like
Absolutely. The Goonies. Yes, I would definitely agree that they're kind of one and the same. Almost the same exact concept.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's very good, very fun. I don't really have anything else.
No.
To intro The Goonies. I think we'll talk more about it next week, but like I said, very good, very fun. You're going to have a lot of fun watching it, and I think we're going to have a lot of fun talking about it.
I already know what shirt I'm going to wear for that one.
Your Goonie shirt.
Oh, shit. I do have a Goonie shirt, but no, I have another shirt that I'm going to wear instead of that one. And you're going to have... Oh, you'll be surprised when I wear it. Because we'll be in the same room together when we watch this one, so...
Yes, we do record these a week early. So next week we will be together because we'll be recording on Easter weekend. So get ready for that. Real time fun. No FaceTime next week. Okay. Well, here's my social media spiel. If you are not following us on Facebook and Instagram, please do so. Facebook.com/FilmFrenzyPodcast and at Instagram's FilmFrenzyPodcast, all also one word. That's the place that you are going to hear from us the most about what's upcoming, what you've missed. Keep an eye out for that. That is the place that you can get into contact with us if you want to suggest a movie or just talk with others who like the movies that we're putting out. So there's a lot of fun video content. You'll see sneak peeks throughout the week of, you know, what we're doing, what we've done. So yeah, best place to get all of your Film Frenzy, all of your Film Frenzy info.
And once again, if anybody has any ideas or movies that you'd like to see us review, drop us a comment. We're always interested in feedback. So if anybody has any feedback on what we've been doing thus far, Let us know what you like and what you don't like.
Yeah, anything you want to see or not seeing, drop a line. Always down. Always down for fun, interesting changes to the podcast. I think that this wheel thing is fun, though. I think that it's fun.
I think it just changes things up for us.
Yeah, a little bit. But anyway, that's it for us. That's it for Lady Bird, for me, anyway. So I guess with that, we will see you next week for the Goonies.
Alrighty. See you guys next week.